or file.
I'm right.
I'm Stan and he's Ollie. It's so wonderful to see all of you angelic people here today. It's just amazing. I mean, where else in the world can you go and find a family that's so vast and so loving? And I mean, some of you we've known for 40 more or more years. And others, we're in a meeting for the first time, but we all feel like brothers and sisters somehow. I mean, it's just, there's no other place like. Gurudas and I have a kind of a little act that we do once in a while. It's been a few months, so please forgive us if we're a little rusty. We usually like to kind of, especially for the younger people who are here who may not have been around in 50 years ago or 45 years ago, to kind of give a little historical background to understand, try to understand a bit how Prabhupada performed such an amazing miracle on this planet, how he could do it in 10 short years, how he could come among us and change the entire world. I mean, Prabhupada was born in 1896. In the 19th century he was born. And yet within his lifetime, he spread the Hare Krishna, Krishna consciousness to every corner of the world. In his day there were no automobiles, no radios even. The first airplane had not yet even been flown. And yet when he came, by the time he came to us, he saw men go to the moon. Krishna prepared this little window for Srila Prabhupada. And one of the main reasons for his success in doing this is that he had such a receptive audience. We had all been, as young people, brought up in a generation of great prosperity after the Second World War. No one had ever seen such a superpower as America. We had everything from births that you could possibly imagine in the way of material goods. We had very high educations. We had every kind of sense gratification possible by the time we were 20 years old. And so a feeling kind of was growing up in the world, especially among the young generation, that this was not all. There must be something more to this. These psychedelic drugs had come on the scene and it awakened a lot of people to the idea that maybe there's a different reality than what we're seeing and what our parents are forcing on us. So Prabhupada came through this little tiny window into time and reached us. I don't think it could ever happen again in such a way. It was so perfect the way Krishna developed all this, looking back. So here we all were, these young people. I'm starting with San Francisco because that's where Prabhupada advented himself to us. At first hundreds, then thousands, and then 100,000, and then maybe 200,000 young people gathered in one neighborhood looking for some meaning to all this, behind all of this material existence. We had every kind of color and magic at our hands. There was a feeling of magic in the air in those days. And who should come to us but the supreme magician? I mean, this was what I think attracted us the most about Prabhupada. His magic advent, his magic appearance, everything he did, starting with his body. His body was so beautiful. I mean, we were young, we were beautiful. We were surrounded by beautiful California. We had every kind of beautiful experience, music going in our lives. What did we need something more than that? But when we saw Prabhupada, we saw something so much more beautiful than anything else we'd known, that this kind of magic attraction was there. I think Prabhupada got us like a magnet would. We didn't understand what he was saying yet. We didn't understand the lifestyle or the culture. In those days, I'd never even met somebody from India. There was no, it wasn't a global world yet. This man came to us from another world. All we knew about India was it's some kind of a magic place where people were, you know, they could crawl up ropes and disappear in the air and fly around on carpets and all that. And we actually got a chance to meet this man. He was so beautiful. He was an old man, and yet his skin shined like light. And every word he said had some amazing meaning. The attraction of magic was the first thing. And he was so courageous. We were young and kind of adventurous ourselves, so this was an attractive idea that this man was so adventurous and he thought so big. Prabhupada was always saying things like, we should go to the president and tell him all of this philosophy. Things like this, huge things. But besides that, all that bigness about Prabhupada, he was so personal and so detailed in his attentions to each and every one of aspects of life. Like he taught us how to do everything, how to eat, how to sleep, how to do every small detail as well. He knew that he was the master of all these things. So, and on top of that, the young people he was dealing with were so untrained, undisciplined, and so outrageous. And yet Prabhupada tolerated everything we did. The feeling in San Francisco the earliest days, of course, was that we were a family. He brought us all together as a family. And he was our father. There was about maybe 20 or 30 of us in the beginning. And none of us knew each other before this. We came from very different walks of life, and so I doubt if I would have ever even spoken to Gurudas under other circumstances. But who knows? Prabhupada brought us together in this family and made us all, kind of forced us to live together, and because we had him as our mutual father, we began to love each other. And how could we go on? There's so many wonderful aspects to Prabhupada, but what sticks in my mind most, and one of the earliest things, is his tolerance for us. His liberal attitude that practically, you know, anything we did in our lives was okay with him.
Yes. He was very tolerant and very open-minded. People were coming to the temple in all sorts of costumes. Even dogs and cats would come in and chant. And he would be open-minded to it all. And what shows me that he was more open-minded is that he knew what the future, the possible future for this family of young aspirants is. That we would become Pukka first-class Vaishnavas. But he couldn't give us too much at first. We would have gotten indigestion, spiritual indigestion. And he even used that analogy. That if you say too much at one time, people will get spiritual indigestion. And so he saw the possibilities, and yet he spoon-fed us in this tolerant way. People were coming in, as I say, I am God. They come into the temple. There were people searching in different ways and sincerely. And they would come in, and there was a plethora. There was so much knowledge from India, from Japan, Zen, Native American. People were trying to better their lives. And because Sam Shinda was saying there was facility, people had some wealth, had some college educations, etc. So this was an art means full belly, a luxury. We were taken care of, so we had the luxury to do a spiritual search. And so Prabhupada let this variety of people, some machine gunners in the Vietnam War, and some drug dealers. Oh, yes, I was a drug dealer too, Grandpa said to Carl Jurgens. What do you do for a living? I'm a drug dealer. Well, I did that too. You see, Prabhupada's, as Sema Shindu was saying, his was a wide vision. For us, we came, he knew, but he had to spoon feed us. A story that shows his perspective. We were on the television in London, and then we're in Bombay, and we're in a doctor's office, his clinic. And he says, you were on television, and now you're in my clinic. Isn't it a small world? And Prabhupada said, yes, it is insignificant. Spiritual material. Why?
I
heard you talk yesterday. Thank you.
At the same time that Prabhupada was initiating us into his ways, we were kind of initiating him into our ways as well. He was learning from us how we lived our lives as much almost as we were learning from him. For example, one of my fondest memories, early memories, was that I found out that Prabhupada liked speed. He had never gone fast in a car till he came to San Francisco.
Sema Shindu have misconstrued what Prabhupada meant by speed.
No. All glories. Anyway, someone had donated us an old, I think it was a 49 or 50 Ford car.
Brother David.
Brother David. And so Prabhupada, on his way in from the airport earlier, a week or so before, had been on the freeway. But one day he asked me if I would take him for a ride around San Francisco. So I put him in the passenger seat in this old Ford was broken so that it sat almost halfway at a 45-degree angle. So Prabhupada was leaning way back like this with his head just barely over the top of the glass. And I took him out on the freeway, and we were going 70 miles an hour. Prabhupada just calmly watching, looking around. He enjoyed that so much. We'd go up one end of the freeway, and he'd say, let's go back. We'd go down the other end of the freeway, let's go back that way again. So we spent the whole afternoon racing around San Francisco. And the whole time, my dog was in the back seat. He was with my dog, he was kind, but he didn't really, pet him or anything. But he allowed us with these dogs for a long time. Gurdas had a dog, too. His dog and my dog hung out in the front of the temple while Prabhupada was speaking every day. And then when we'd go out, Prabhupada would walk between the dogs on his way up to his room. And it was only after some time that he said, well, maybe it's better you shouldn't have dogs. This is the kind of tolerance that he accepted everything we did and just kind of gradually transformed us with his magic.
Yeah, maybe it's better that you don't smoke cigarettes at one Istogoshi. Like that. He wouldn't give us too much at once. Then the next morning, there was a whole pack of cigarettes on the way to the temple. And I just kicked them. Because Prabhupada's words were in my ears. So, open-minded, tolerant, and imaginative. You told the very nice story about the gongs. Well, another time we were riding in India, and as you know, in India, the most important thing is the horn, the brakes, and the engine, in that order. So, the horn didn't work. But when it did, amazingly, by Krishna's grace, the cows, the horses, the people would just veer off the road. People drying dal would pull their mats in as the cars were coming close. Everybody was in harmony when they'd hear the horn, but the horn didn't work. So the car was going and it almost hitting people, and in Prabhupada's compassion, he said, "Give me my plate." And he took the plate and took his cane and he banged it like a horn. And sure enough, the cows, the horses, the people drying dal all went off the road. Prabhupada looks at this phenomena and says, and laughs, "They will think it is a new American invention and try to imitate." So we're all coming to San Francisco, and he's allowing all these. We were not in dhotis or shaved head. He had an Afghani shepherd's robe that smelled like sheep. I had a samurai robe, and Mukunda was Merlin the magician. Plus, the car was Brother David, the founder of Children of God, who Prabhupada allowed an altar with Lord Jesus on it. But it burned up, interestingly enough. So we had a picture of Jesus Christ in the temple. He was spoon-feeding us. We didn't have books. We didn't have prayers. Every day he was open-minded, something new. He was ahead of us. He could walk further than us. He can chant more than us. He could read into the night when we weren't prasadam.
Everything he did was magic.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like we were in a magic spell of some kind. And we were all on the same magic carpet going the same way with Srila Prabhupada sitting in the middle. I mean, nobody worked. Nobody had a job. Except Jayananda. He drove a taxi and he gave whatever he made to the temple. But it was not much.
I worked two jobs.
He worked. Anyway, there wasn't ever enough money. But always Krishna somehow provided the money. Like one morning, Malati and I left our apartment early in the morning, just before dawn, to get the early Prabhupada spoke at 7 a.m. every morning. And on we had something like 2 months' rent due on the temple. And as we stepped out of our apartment on Ashbury Street, it was a kind of a hill coming down to our place, all these $100 bills were blowing down the pavement. There was no one on the pavement at that hour. It was $100 bill after another blowing by in the wind. So we grabbed all this money and took it to the temple to pay the bills. But we didn't think twice about it. Well, that was just Prabhupada sending his magic. Nobody thought about it. These things happened almost every day like this.
It would be like that. Things would just manifest. And he was our father. And he never asked for anything for himself. He had a little, like a trunk for his desk. He didn't tell us, "You have to bow down." When he first came to San Francisco, Mukunda embraced him. We had this entourage of different cars, all painted, and people.
I shook his hand.
Yeah, you shook his hand. Like that. And he'd come in to the airport, and to show his timing, where was the Swami? Well, you know, if you go on an airplane, people get up and wait. Why would Prabhupada get up and wait? He waits till everybody goes then. Like the great personage, he strides out of the airplane. There he is. We're in San Francisco. And here he comes. He sits in the middle of us, smiling beatifically. Honest, all these people had didn't know, and we felt like, wow, he's blessing us, and we felt at home. We were, as I say, interested in many types of knowledge. But now here is someone putting a whole thing in place for us. It wasn't that we weren't having a good time. So he sits down and he puts his cartels on perfectly. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, circled us, the people, Swamiji's in our midst from New York, and we see some, I noticed some officials coming over to get us to stop, and just as they arrived here, Prabhupada stopped. They had nothing to do. So then we get to the temple, and he looks at it, and he was so pleased. Now, I wanted to say something that Prabhupada, very open-minded and very looking at the good in us, but he was not easily pleased. If he wanted you to do something, he would make me go back and back, and I'll tell the registration of the society in Bombay story to indicate that later. But as soon as you did it nicely, then the compliments would flow off in a poetic way. But not until you did it would he do that. That is his being a teacher. And so here we are. He's sitting on the altar. He didn't tell us, I deserve a Vyasasan. I deserve a Danda. I deserve this. No, he was just there inspiring each and every one of our talents and aspirations. And so finally, and there was a totem pole. You've heard this story many times. He allowed a totem pole with eagle noses and wings and everything to the right of the altar that Haridas did. And Haridas thought the Panchatattva were women. This is all things. And Prabhupada went, oh. And he told Haridas, that has to be changed. So things were changing. There was a prayer in the temple one day. Now Prabhupada's on the Vyasasan suddenly. So things were changing slowly, but as we were able to accept it, he did not push it. Okay. And so now we finally, and that's a huge, long story, and we know the story of Lord Jagannath and how Malati could get everything. And not only Lord Jagannath, but it's like one day Prabhupada's looking out the window and this dairy truck stopped, and Malati took a whole flat of butter. Thank you very much. And so Prabhupada saw this, and he's saying we should treat other people's possessions like stool. That's theirs. How will they miss it? He's teaching us slowly all these things. And Malati was devastated. She was really good at getting things, and she thought he'd be very pleased. And he was. He was very nice about it. And then, as always, he instructed us, and he forgave us. He said, but if you have to steal something, steal butter. Because of Muckenchur. And I'm going to tell you one more.
Okay. Yeah.
Muckenchur. So aspire for that. So this is how he'd forgive us so many times. In all our innocence, we would do something impure or by mistake, and he would just laugh. I was telling the story about the time the dancers were saying, we feel like second-class citizens in L.A. We're not encouraged. The book distributors are, and we would like to go to India. How should we do it, Gurudas? So I said, put on a play. When Prabhupada comes into the compound, put your costumes on and put a little play on, and I'll ask Prabhupada if he wants to see a play. So they did, and then I said to Prabhupada, these dancers and dramatists want to put a play on for you. When would you like it? He said, tomorrow. So in that, it was the temple was over there, I think, back then. And so it's the Palambarasura story with Prajapati playing Balaram, and he was bigger than the demons. So the demons started to get crushed under the Balaram's weight. And I looked over Prabhupada, because this was my study. What would Prabhupada do? Like, here's there's a fire. How are you reacting? So Prabhupada was just laughing. He had to clutch onto the side of the temple. Prabhupada laughed. He said, this play is very nice. They regain their composure. The next morning, we're in the hangar, the book hangar, and we're walking, and there's a devotee, Shruti, and he was bowing down to Prabhupada, and his head was hitting the forklift, and the forklift was going up to the ceiling and smashing the neon. And I knew this was poison, the neon. So I took Prabhupada and all the devotees away from him. So Prabhupada says to Rameshwar, there are many accidents. And Rameshwar said, no, there's never accidents. We have a perfect safety record. So with me, my 2 cents, 2 paisa, I said, except for today, Prabhupada goes around the corner and there's a little dark room and a table, and underneath the table, Prabhupada takes his cane and says, what's this? And Rameshwar said, these were the books that were returned. So this is all going on. And then Prabhupada said, let us spread the Krishna conscious arts to every town and village as much as the books. And so this is what Prajapati was waiting for. They went and got Prajapati. And he said, let us spread the Krishna conscious arts to every town and village. And that enabled the dancers to go to India. Then Prabhupada goes around the corner and there's a brahmachari 2 days into Krishna consciousness, and he's sleeping. And he wakes up and says, oh, that's the guy. That's the head. There's pictures on all the... That's the head. And Prabhupada looked at him so sweetly and calmed him down. And he said, he had some Q-tips. And he said to somebody, I need some Q-tips. I'd like some Q-tips. And the boy gave him the Q-tips and Prabhupada said, Vaishnava Prashadam. So then one more before we get to you. We get Jagannath, and so we decide, let's take Lord Jagannath for a walk at Hippie Hill. So we take Lord Jagannath out of the temple, and we take him to the base of Hippie Hill, and Prabhupada comes in, where's Lord Jagannath? And he jumps up and runs faster than we could imagine. When he held up the altar with me in London, he was like a lion, so strong. He could be so strong. He took Saraswati and held her up with one hand and said, they will say what kind of sannyasi am I. So he's strong, and he runs to the park, and there's Lord Jagannath, and he said, well, we only take Lord Jagannath out once a year. He's instructing us. But he said, as long as he's here and we're here, let's sit down and chant.
Yeah, as we started to become a family and relate to each other, everyone had to figure out how to relate to the spiritual master, the Swami, how to get attention from this is what we started to figure out, that we would be happier the more attention we got from the Swami. So we began to push ourselves at him a little bit. He had a couple of guys trying to keep us out of his rooms, but we... Those of us who kind of wanted to get, we figured we could get more spiritual advancement by getting attention from Prabhupada more and more. So we would push ourselves in various ways into his room, into his attention. So one thing we found out that I began to figure out is that he had given me, assigned me this task of making and Jagannath deities, the big ones, the first ones. So I realized that he was only hanging around San Francisco to install these deities, that if I went slow, that if I carved these as slow as I could, he would have to stay longer. And then I would get more attention from him. So I let it go. About once a week he would call me in and say, how's the carving coming? Are we just about ready? I need to fix a date. They're calling me from New York. They're calling me from Los Angeles. You know, hurry up and finish. And so I'd say, Prabhupada, well, you know, I need to fill some holes and do some more painting. I have to wait till the paint dries, blah, blah, blah. So one day I'm in there carving, in my, I had an apartment on Haight Street on the second floor, several blocks, well, a couple of miles from the temple. And I heard a knock on the door. I opened the door, and there's Prabhupada standing there. And he says, "So, how is the Jagannath coming?" And I come in, Prabhupada. I bowed down. He came in. Jagannath was laying on the floor there, and I said, "Well, he's almost ready." And we talked a little bit. And then he noticed on top of the Jagannath's head, there was a package of cigarettes. Pall Mall cigarettes, what I used to smoke. And he looked at that, and he said, "What are those?" Those are cigarettes. That's tobacco, Srila Prabhupada. He kind of looked around and he took his cane and went, whack! And he hit that pack of cigarettes and knocked across the room and said, "We should not smoke." That was it. That was the last time I ever smoked. But these are the kind of tolerant ability that Prabhupada had to get us all in. And he inspired and fostered this idea that we should be aggressive toward him in terms of trying to spread Krishna consciousness. We figured the bigger things we did to spread Krishna consciousness, the more attention we'd get from Prabhupada. And that became the case. So we got kind of a transcendental competition going among the devotees. You know, Gurudas and Mukunda were out getting him television engagements and big meetings in different halls, and that was their service. And I'd feel kind of like, well, I better do something bigger, you know, like that. And we gradually picked up Prabhupada's spirit. His spirit was to do big things, risk it all, just as he had done. He had risked more than anybody could imagine to even be with us. And his method, his process was his activity was to spread Krishna consciousness. He said two things. He said, "So you become Krishna conscious and you spread Krishna consciousness." And we knew that we would get the most attention from him the more Krishna consciousness we spread. This was the original spirit that took root in San Francisco in those times.
So Samashinda was connected with Rock Scully of the Grateful Dead. He roomed with him, and I knew some people, and we knew some people, so we thought, let's have a benefit for the Radha Krishna temple. And so Allen Ginsberg came to town, Mr. Ginsberg. Prabhupada would call him Mr. Ginsberg. And they talked it over, and they decided, because this was the heyday of these dances. They were just starting to happen in the Avalon Ballroom, the Fillmore, and Bill Graham and Chet Helms, and different people had different ways they were doing it, but there was lots of these kind of dances. The diggers were putting them on and everything like this. So we decided, with some of the greatest bands that we were able to attract, Moby Grape, Jefferson Airplane, right?
And Janis Joplin.
Yeah, Janis Joplin. And we put on a benefit, which was very successful. And about 3 weeks earlier, we were going to those dances not as devotees. And so it was very nice, because this was one of the first successes. I did arrange some radio and TV shows. Prabhupada liked it very much. The one famous show, we had it all planned out. It was a call-in show. So we had devotees call in questions to Prabhupada. Garga Muni calls and says, "Swamiji, what's the meaning of life?" Prabhupada talked for 20 minutes. Next question, "Who am I?" 20 minutes. The guy's catching on. He says, "Let's have somebody not your organization call in." So they screen calls before. So this lady comes on and says, "Swamiji, why is your so-called temple..." Prabhupada says, "So-called? No, it has deities. It has worship. It has books. Okay, why is your temple in the Haight Ashbury?" The rents are inexpensive. Why are you preaching to the hippies? They are happies. How did you get here? Well, I had a free passage on the Sindhia shipping line from India. Oh, are you a freeloader? Prabhupada never heard the word, but he said yes. And then we heard a fainting sound and a hit on the floor over the
But Prabhupada, he entered every aspect of our life. You know, he would ask us what we had for breakfast that morning. He would say, oh, you have a cold, here's the remedy. He would give the girls recipes. I mean, he was like with us all the time. And everyone had the feeling, even though there was maybe 30, 40 of us by then, that we had a separate relationship with Prabhupada, that he was only pleased with me and my servants. Everyone shared the same feeling with Prabhupada. He was so huge that he pleased us all 100%, 100%, all the time. So much so that our lives were just exhilarated. Haight Ashbury began to change. There was a lot of negativity starting. The glory days or the summer of love was ending. And Prabhupada, by then we had advanced enough to, in our understanding of Prabhupada's process to realize that we need now to go out of the nest, to leave the nest, and go out and spread Krishna consciousness in other places. This was his basic. He trained us to do this. So at that time, George Harrison and had come to the Haight Ashbury and done a famous walkthrough. And we began to get the idea maybe that the center of young activity was moving toward London, toward England. The British rock wave was coming through. And people were more attracted now to UK, to England. The scene in Southern California was fading away. So that's when we asked Prabhupada if we could go to London and start a temple. Mm-hmm. And just before leaving, he said, well, you will go after your child is born. And Malati was pregnant at the time. He said, yes, you can go, but after the child is born. That was our deadline then. So he had gone to Montreal to do because of his visa. He had some visa problems in the United States, so he went to Canada, where they'd recently started another temple. And so little Sarah was born. Saraswati was born in the French hospital in San Francisco. And I called Prabhupada up on the phone and told him that I had a daughter. She was born, that we could go now. He said, okay. He said, and her name shall be Saraswati. And you can leave when she is 2 months old. So personal. He managed every aspect of our lives, even naming our children.
Like that, you were saying, how everybody felt like Prabhupada had a special personal relationship with every one of us. And at first, it was Mukunda and Hayagriva and Ray Rama, maybe you wouldn't get to see Prabhupada. But we pushed our way in. They just told me, don't let Gurudas in. But I'd go in, and at that time, the people in the kitchen would leave him. Oh, no, Gurudas is back there again. But Prabhupada didn't say that. And then we'd go in the kitchen, and Prabhupada would go there. I'd be watching this, and he'd take a pakora, and Hasharani would say, Swamiji, you can't touch the food while we're making it for Krishna. And he said, I taught you the rules, I can break them. So then he takes another one. And she says, how many can you eat? And he puffs out his chest and says, more than you can make.
Janaki had a very special relationship with Prabhupada in those days. Janaki was his spoiled daughter, sort of. She could tell him what to do. I remember, never forget it, one day he came out of his room in the hallway there and she said, Swamiji, that dirty is dirty. You get back in there and change it. And very meekly he turns around and goes back to his room and changes his stuff.
Well, I just heard from Govindadasi, wonderful Govindadasi, So she's told me that when they were in the kitchen, they used to have this wonderful relationship with Prabhupada. But it was very personal, like I said. So then some people would come in, and Prabhupada's manner would change. And so they would look at each other and say, oh, now Prabhupada is being the acharya. So now, Govinda Dasi's parents are from Texas, and they come, and now we have a Vyasa song. And so Govinda Dasi's father did not like that she was becoming a devotee, because he had plans. So he goes up with his wife to the Vyasa song, and we, the Patels from India, Gujarat, all go to the Vyasa song because they want to hear a shlok from Prabhupada. And so they're surrounding this guy from Texas, and I could see he was worried. It was like General Custard and the Indians. He's going like this. So Prabhupada picks up on it, and he says, why does my daughter have to have an Indian name? And Prabhupada says, he sees all the Patels, and he says, you do not like Indians? So the guy says, yeah, I like Indians, all right. So then Prabhupada comes with this classic line, which I heard over the years. If your daughter is happy with her name and her life, why do you object? They had nothing to say. So this is Prabhupada's.
So you can imagine we've taken on this task of going to London to start a temple. And we knew how special this London would be to Prabhupada because of the history of his own spiritual master. He had tried to start a center there, and to his way of thinking and his predecessor's way of thinking, the British Empire had its center in London. That was the most important city in the world. So you can imagine our pain knowing we had to leave Prabhupada. And the procedure up to then had been to start a new temple in Los Angeles or Seattle or somewhere. It was just find a storefront, pay the rent for a month, and invite Prabhupada. You know, there it is, the instant temple. But we had a different idea. Our idea was that we would start a temple in London so grand and so suitable to Prabhupada that he could become the king of England like that. That was our idea. And we were willing to sacrifice a year, months. We thought at first maybe a couple months, 3 months, 4 months, and then it became 6 months, a year. We wouldn't let Prabhupada come until we had this thing perfect for him. And he would write letters almost every day to one of us, at least once a day to one of us. I'm coming. Prepare for me. And we'd send back a letter. Prabhupada, you can't come quite yet. Things aren't perfect for you yet. So in this way, for almost a year, more than a year.
We didn't have a temple yet. We were living in different flats.
But when we did finally get a premises, we waited almost a year, and then when Prabhupada did come, he was hosted by one of the most famous people in the world, John Lennon. A big white limousine picked him up, took him to a country estate. His headquarters were going to be in central London. They were being built very nicely. His Hare Krishna mantra was the number one song on the hit parade. So when Prabhupada came to England, it was a different Prabhupada. In San Francisco, he was our father of a small and intimate family. In England, he became the king. He was like a regal, rare personality when he came to England. And he reflected it. You know, his way of looking was more noble and stronger. He was a public presence then. Everywhere he went in England, he had his chin up high, and he had his people with him. He was the king of England. It was wonderful. You want to tell some England stories?
Well, I wanted to go back once more to San Francisco because a very important thing happened. And because we're so joyous, and this is such a wonderful family, and we try to sometimes accentuate the levity and the humor of Prabhupada, but we were feeling so comfortable. He was spoon-feeding, teaching us prayers, everything in the temple, and then suddenly Prabhupada had a stroke, and we were devastated, and we went to the temple and chanted harder than ever before, praying. And so we didn't know if Prabhupada would ever come back. And he also said, now you have started. I run 108 temples. He said the words. I may not be here or something like that. It just devastated us. And then Prabhupada came back with new vigor. But this was a thing that pulled us together closely. As Samashinda said, this phenomena of each of us feeling that we all had a special relationship with Prabhupada, what is this analogous to? Who can say? Krishna and what? Krishna and the gopis. Or Krishna and us as well. But all the gopis thought, yes! Krishna's drinking my sweet, Krishna's listening to my instrument, Krishna's dancing with me in this way. That's what Prabhupada is able to do. He found our talents. Oh, you take photograph? Yes, I'm photographing you. He says, there's a superstition in India that if you photograph somebody too much, their life will be shortened. Stop. So then he says, what do you think of that, Gurudas ji? And I regained, and I said, it's not how long we live, it's what we do with our life. And he said, yes, I'm just joking. That is just a superstition. So this is the way he found, because I have a sense of humor, he would actually invoke my humor. I mean, there were certain jokes he would do. At first there was a joke about the yogis are pushing their nose, he said, but we will reach Krishna by eating. That was a joke. And every time he pushed his nose like that, I would laugh. So the first time he said that, I laughed out loud, and he looked over at me like... So then, the next time he said it, he looked over to see if I was laughing.
Have you ever seen that picture of Prabhupada laughing like this? He took it.
So now we're in England.
Okay. And so the magic carpet goes on, but on another higher level. I mean, here we were at John Lennon's house, you know, hanging out with Yoko, walking around, and the Beatles were the most famous people in the world. People like George were dropping by daily for chats with Prabhupada, and we had also met other, because we were very popular. The Radha Krishna Temple was one of the most popular entertainment groups in Britain at the time. So we met a lot of lords and ladies. So we began setting up appointments for them to come and visit Prabhupada. He loved that. And then we realized in the same way that we could keep him there longer. We could retain him in our presence longer by inviting more and more of these people to come. Well, you can't leave yet, Prabhupada. The Lord so-and-so is coming next week. And I will stay.
Westminster Abbey.
And not only lords and ladies, but big philosophers, big church people, famous people of all kinds came to see Prabhupada. And that was because he didn't have a temple yet. We were still working on that. He used his time that way to see people on a daily basis, famous people. And speaking of the temple, I was working every day on it, but I knew in the same way that if I went slower, Prabhupada would have to stay, because he wasn't going to leave till he had initiated the deities. I mean, till he had installed the deities in that temple. So month after month dragged by, and one time Prabhupada came down, the same thing, he appeared at the door with his servants. I've come to see the progress. And he spent the whole afternoon there walking around inspecting every part of the woodwork, the false ceiling that we had built, the dome, the electrical stuff, and he asked every question about it as an expert. Prabhupada was expert in everything, by the way. Everyone knows that, maybe. But there wasn't a subject of any kind that you couldn't ask Prabhupada about it, and he would give you the full answer on everything. That was his expertise in every subject. But finally, you know, we had to finish the temple. But there were still no deities. There were no deities for this grand temple that had taken a year to build at great expense and labor. Had no deities. We thought, well, Krishna will provide them. You know, that's part of it. We never thought about that the deities wouldn't show up, that they wouldn't be there. Nobody made it any kind of subject of concern at all until Prabhupada said one day, well, you know, we don't have any deities, do we? And I need to go to California here soon. And that's when that, you want to tell that story? The kidnapping of the deity?
Okay. It was really yeoman work that Samashunda and Tirthapada were single-handedly building this temple. And talk about visionaries. Prabhupada, Samashunda is a visionary. He really is. He had the vision to bring a whole shipload of redwood for the possibility of us finding a temple in London. And there was just seven of us. And he had that much faith that he got together this redwood and put it in a ship. So now he's building the temple, and he forgot to tell you that he was doing the slow tactic again. So Prabhupada's smarter than us, right? And so he goes up and says, sorry? He goes up and he says, Prabhupada, would you like me to stop working? The hammering might be disturbing you. And Prabhupada says, no, when I hear hammering, I know you're working. So we need to see, this is, so deities, we did some gigs at the Hindu Center and different places in London. We All Souls Church, we would go on different programs, and Prabhupada encouraged them all the time. No matter what, it would be like, he says, let's go to this person's house. And Jamuna came in and said, well, Prabhupada, you know, we went there last week, and three neighbors came. We outnumbered the audience, and I threw up on the prasadam. Prabhupada says, we can go. But then I said, Prabhupada, it was really a waste of time. So then Prabhupada says, okay, I accepted it, but you must refuse. He would do that. Somebody would come to be a life member. Oh, Prabhupada, if you ask him to be a life member, they'll surely do it. He says, no, I'm not sure if he will, and I don't like anyone to say no to me. You ask. So this is also the human side of Prabhupada, which he never hid. He let his human side, when we were in his room, he would put his foot up and his head behind his hand behind his head and just relax and tell jokes. Well, no joking matter, we needed some deities, so we heard at the Hindu Center this Mr. Goyal has some deities, and they weren't sure if they were to be installed because the finger of Radharani was broken and they didn't want to do it. So Prabhupada went there. He told me, get the temple ready. And he and Tamal and Yogeshwar, did you
know? I was there, yeah.
And Samashinda, they went, well, didn't you tell the story? I'm back at the temple.
Yeah, we went there just as a formal visit to the principals of the Hindu East London Hindu Center, and then Prabhupada, after the conversation was almost finished, Prabhupada said, "Oh, by the way, I understand you have some deities that you just got from India. They were the full size marble deities from Jaipur with the in big wooden boxes." And they said, yeah, we have them here, but we wanted to ask you, if it's okay if we install them because Radharani's finger is broken. And we think that that's not whatever, etiquette or something. So Prabhupada said, let us see these deities. And they brought one box out, three or four guys to carry each box, and they were sitting in the middle of this small bed-sitting room. And Prabhupada said to Tamal, he said, just pick Krishna up. So he went over there and see if you can lift him. And Pinal went over there and picked it up. And he could manage. Just one person, he picked it up. Prabhupada says, take it out. Out goes Pinal with the deer. Shamasundar, you and Mukunda pick up Radharani. So we did, and we went out too. And these guys are just sitting there going, like this, and Prabhupada stole those deities.
They wanted bakshis, but
I don't know if we ever paid them anything. But we had lots of money. Now, don't forget, our song was in the top 20. We were getting royalties, thousands of pounds a week. We had a cash flow. Plus, we were playing in concerts all over England. Prabhupada would see us when we came back at 6 in the morning from Manchester or something. He'd just be sitting there. He'd want to hear all about the concert, how many people came. What songs did you do? You know, how many people, you know, we'd give him our report. So he even went to one of these shows with us to Amsterdam. He went to a television show there that we did, a live TV show. That's another story. But to illustrate how Prabhupada always did everything according to time, place, and circumstance, what you were saying about you be the bad guy, he's saying to you, because he didn't want to take responsibility for something, so he'd say to one of us, you be the bad guy, you know. But sometimes he did just the opposite.
Yeah.
One time he told me, you go ask George Harrison for $41,000 to print this Krishna book.
Tell him that we didn't ask him for anything.
Yeah, and I said, no, I can't do that, Prabhupada. I can't ask George for anything because that's the way he is. And he's always given when he feels like it, but it's our policy not to ask him for anything. So Prabhupada actually used these words. He says, then I will be the bad guy. You tell him that I requested the money. So sometimes he was the good guy, sometimes he was the bad guy.
And tell them the story of how it transpired.
I don't want to hear any. This is
okay.
It's not about Prabhupada.
We decided we would try to minimize ourselves and glorify Prabhupada. But actually, it's a good story.
Well, it's a part of Prabhupada's magic. Wherever Prabhupada went, magic followed him. And we had no reservations about that at all. We had no doubt. I mean, we're so convinced that Prabhupada was a magic person. I finally worked up the nerve to ask George late in the evening. We were at someone's house for dinner whether he would give the money for the Krishna book. And I knew when I asked him that he would think of us as just like everybody else, out for some money, and then he would turn negative against us. I didn't want to do it, but I had promised Prabhupada I would. So I waited till the very last minute of the evening. It had been a long, stormy English summer day, thunderstorms and so on. And so I finally worked up the nerve after the dessert was served. I said, George, by the way, I said, Prabhupada asked me to ask you if you would print this book. And I showed him the rough publisher's copy of the book with some pictures and stuff. And this look came over his eyes. Oh my God, they're just like everybody else. He looks so, he's got a big frown on his face. And suddenly, the lights, a big bolt of lightning hit the house. Boom! And all the lights went out. And it was silent for about 30 seconds or so. And then the lights flickered and came back on, and I looked over at George, and he had this huge smile on his face. Of course I'll print the Krishna book. I never doubted for a minute that Prabhupada would come through. He had also said before I went out on this, he says, Krishna will help you. Because I was so devastated that I had to ask him. He said, the last thing he said as I was going out the door is, Krishna will help you. Magic. It still goes on. We're
so
still in this place.
Now we're going to India. And
we're already in India?
Well, no, we don't have to be.
I guess
we should hear as much from him because he's not always here.
I had one more story in London.
Okay.
The time that Prabhupada appeared to be ill. That's a good story. One time, I don't know. Okay, it's a story. One time, I was sleeping outside of Prabhupada's door in a little room next to his bedroom in Berry Place. And in the middle of the night, I heard in my dreams, I heard this, my name, Shyam Sundar. I woke up really fast. I ran to Prabhupada's door, and I opened the door. And he seemed so small. He seemed only like he was about this big. And he fell into my arms. I caught him like this and picked him up, and he didn't weigh anything. It was like a paper doll, so light. It was almost in a way, but I was suddenly terrified. What's going on? And the room was all dark, so I went in and I laid him on the bed, and I turned the fire up because he was shaking, shivering like this, shaking. And so I turned the fire up and got the room as hot as possible. And tried to figure out what's going on. What's going on? Prabhupada was silent, breathing, barely breathing, and laying there. And suddenly I heard him say in a mumble that I should prepare a paste out of pepper, black pepper, a paste. So I woke somebody up, and one of the girls up, and I told her to make this paste quickly. And she brought it up, and I put it on Prabhupada's temples and forehead, according to his direction. And then he went to sleep. And I sat there by his bed for hours thinking, oh, it's all over now. You know, Prabhupada's going to leave us. Something's badly wrong. I didn't know whether to call an ambulance or what. And so I just waited because Prabhupada said, no hospital. No hospital. He always told us that, no hospital. And the sun started coming up. And the room started getting brighter and brighter. And suddenly Prabhupada popped up in his bed and looked at me and says, so, is it time for the morning walk? Like nothing happened.
And the same thing in Vrindavan. I was by his bed, and he was very weak. And I was sitting there, and I was not sure what was to do or what was going to happen. And then he appeared to rest a little. And then he got up and said, so we shall ride Indira Gandhi? Same thing. And and like it was like 20 minutes he was rejuvenated like that. And then I said, Prabhupada, you appear to be ill. And he says, but I am also transcendental.
Well, I mean, it seems like in London, the doors for going back to India, for Prabhupada's long-term plan to go back to India, began to open. You started to... There were more Indian people living in London. Prabhupada began interacting again with the Indian community. You took him to see the ambassador once or twice, I remember. And people like Ravi Shankar were coming to visit him. And I think he began to think then about going back to India. This was about 1970. And he instructed us that we should prepare. And he sent all of you guys, Madhavisa and the rest who came in from America, he sent everybody out invitations. And do you want to talk about then the India invasion?
First, Achyutananda and Ramanuja and Subal, a few people went at an early investigation. Then some few devotees went with Prabhupada to Calcutta. And then Prabhupada said, now we must come and bring equipment. He wrote me in London. So we got, and he said, bring the best devotees from all the temples, the Korean. So 17 devotees showed up, Giri Raj and so many. And we went there, and then Shamashunda and Ribadi Nandan went the next week after he left. You had something to do.
No, I was on the plane with you. I'll never forget it, standing in the shade of that, the only shade in this town of Aden, which is on the tip of the Arabian Peninsula. The plane stopped there, the little plane we were in, DC-3, to fuel up, and there was one palm tree. Right. And we were all lined up in the shade of the palm tree in a row, and you were there. I'll never forget
right.
it.
Right, talk about a family. And in our devotees' innocence, it was the day after the premier of Egypt, in Egypt, in Cairo, Nasser, was assassinated the day before, and the airport was full of big pictures of Nasser and black bunting all over the place. They're mourning. So Giriraj is there, and you know the story about Giriraj not having a sense of humor when he came from Boston, and I talked to him at the airplane, and he says, Maya's out there, and I said, do you see what's going on in the airplane? There were ghosts and chickens and people regurgitating in the aisles, and there was only a blanket between the cockpit, and the plane was going like that. Everybody's pulling their Hanuman and Shiva and Krishna out. And it's going like that. So we get to Cairo. So Giriraj now has flowered, and he leads us all on the tarmac to chant. Well, I wasn't there because I had to check on our bags being transferred. I was leading the party. So I go back, and I see them chanting, and it's great. And I see these soldiers rushing with bayonets because it was the day after Nasser. So Chaitra Guru came into my... And I went in between the army and the devotees and said, they're chanting the praises of President Nasser. And they said, oh, and then they guarded us.
Well, if Prabhupada was the family father in San Francisco and the king of England, I would have to say in India he became the CEO. He brought us all there, and he managed the whole show. You know, he left it up to us in England. He just enjoyed. But in India, he managed every moment of our time there. Whether he was with us or not, it was by letters or telephone or telegrams. He masterminded the invasion of Normandy kind of thing, you know. He was like, I never saw him in such a managerial... strong managerial position.
Yeah.
Early days in India.
It was so vast and so many projects and so few devotees. We went to Amritsar and we get smack dab in the middle of a Mayavadi gathering. So they're up there doing Tat Vimasi and I Am Thou and doing that. So it's my turn to speak. And I'm talking about spiritual variegatedness, that we have variety in the spiritual world. We have pastimes. We're individual, achintaveda veda tattva. We have individual relationships with Krishna. And that's why we don't just marry everyone. You pick a certain wife because that person you feel love and special compatibility with. So there's variety, variety. I said, that's why we eat prasadam and not stool in the street. So the head of the thing gives me the hook. He just takes me off the stage. Goes to Prabhupada. He says, your disciple said that there's variety and that's why we eat prasadam and not stool in the street. So Prabhupada says, my American and European disciples use graphic examples. So the guy leaves and Prabhupada says, can I use that example? So then, well, it's a good story. Prabhupada.
Good.
Okay, so Giriraj. Giriraj and I, he's really flowering now. Giriraj comes and takes over, and he's saying, yes, that's why we eat prasadam and not stool in the street. Oh, no. So they had to accept it. So then everybody, it's time to go to sleep. And because I was a caring personality, I made sure everybody was in the place where Prabhupada was sleeping, and they were comfortable. They had blankets, everything. And so there's no room left for Giriraj and I. So we go into the Mayavadi tent. And so one guy says, I am God, you are God. The fire and the spark are the same. And I said, a spark doesn't cook a meal. It's the fire. They have the same quality, but not the same quantity. He says, no, no, you don't understand. He says, see, the thread and this blanket are the same. So it's really cold. So I said, okay. And I took his blanket. And it was really cold up there in Amritsar. And so then about 10 minutes later, he says, please give me my blanket. I said, no, you said, here's the thread. It's the same. So he says, no, give me my blanket. I said, then you must go to my guru and bow down before him if I give you the thread. Which he did the next day.
I wanted to tell the Russia story. Is that all right, briefly?
Of course.
It's just a small... But as these years with Prabhupada gradually came more and more, even though we saw him every day almost, and for a while when I was his secretary, every hour of every day I saw Prabhupada. But each time that I was going to open his door to go in for some reason, I always felt, always, from the first day to forever, that whatever happens on the other side of that door after I open is going to be wonderful and extremely different than anything else that's ever happened to me. Prabhupada always surprised us. Every minute he threw a different surprise. We could never predict. It was totally unpredictable. What he would say or do, you could never tell, ever. So I wanted to say the most powerful that I've ever seen him do anything, the most powerful act was the 5 days that we spent in Russia in 1972. 5 days, he transformed the entire Eastern Bloc of nations. Entire world history he changed in 5 days. It was so powerful, the most powerful example I could give of Prabhupada's abilities. cutting it short, it was Brezhnev's time. The president of Russia was named Brezhnev, the dictator of Russia. And it was the height of the Cold War. And that was, you know, the Iron Curtain was there, and Russia and the U.S. were deadly enemies. The world might be broken by a nuclear war any day. That was the height of that feeling. And somehow or other we got a visa to go there. Prabhupada had been wanting to go to Russia for years, but finally the opportunity came. We left from Bombay. And there were 5 days. Only 5 days is all they gave us. And I had one little, at the last moment I got a little camera that I bought in the black market in downtown Bombay that had 12 black and white pictures for it. That's all the film I could find, was 12 pictures. So we get on the plane, we had one flimsy letter from Professor Katovsky, generally saying that if Prabhupada ever made it to Moscow, that they would love to meet him. That's all. We used that as our excuse to go. So the first day we arrive, they take us to this state-owned hotel, and they assigned someone to guide us. We had to be watched every minute, and if I left to go out at all, I could tell several people following me wherever I went. But in that very, very short time, in the first day, we went to see Professor Katovsky, and you might have seen the transcript of the conversation he and Prabhupada had. He was so surprised to hear from me, I called him and said, we're here. So he made an appointment for us, and we came, and obviously we weren't allowed to have a tape recorder going in there, but I smuggled one in under my dhoti and put it under the table as Professor Katovsky and Prabhupada talked. That's why you have a tape to this day. So I smuggled that in and out. And we have 4 more days left. The meeting's over with. Now we have no reason to be here. So I said, you know, and Prabhupada, he was always wanting to do something. So the next morning I said, well, we can go sightseeing. Okay, let us go sightseeing. So we got on a state-owned bus with a guide and they took us to see this and that. Prabhupada made some the usual comments you would expect about. We passed a church that was all boarded up, and there was a soldier standing in front. And I said, Prabhupada, they close all the churches here. There you can't go to church anymore. And he made all the comments about, you know, how the communist nation has killed God, and so on. And so about halfway through the tour, we were out at Lenin University, I think it was called, or Stalin University, whatever. And Prabhupada got so bored, and he said, let us go back. So I just called a taxi, and we got in. I gave him the directions, the name of the hotel. He took us to the hotel, and then I realized I have no money. So I said to the guy, you know, I said, no money, and I pointed to Prabhupada and said, he's a saint. Okay, no problem. He let us go, and they recognized a saintly person there. So when the third day is coming, so I realized that I needed to get some money changed, and I went to the bank. And as I came out of the bank, I met this one Russian boy and one Indian boy who was with him, and we started talking. They wanted to know if I had some jeans to sell them, or Beatles records, if I had any Beatles records to give them, sell to them. And I said, no, but I have a spiritual master back in the hotel, a guru from India. And of course the Indian boy understood who he was, and this young Russian boy was very smart. He was a philology student, that means the study of languages. He spoke English, and I brought him back to meet Prabhupada, and in 3 days Srila Prabhupada transformed this young Russian boy into a pure devotee of Krishna. He made him sit with him, and it put on all. I never saw Prabhupada so charming, so powerful, so concentrated and focused. In 3 days, he changed the entire history of that country. It was a marvelous sight to see. This boy had no idea who Krishna was when he walked in the door, and after 3 days, he took it on as his life task to spread Krishna consciousness in Soviet Union. A wonderful story.
What a seed that was planted. Today it's blooming. Yeah. And the devotees are so sweet, enthusiastic. It reminds me of when I first came across Krishna consciousness. I'll tell one more story, because it demonstrates, as I said, that Prabhupada did not flatter you artificially. He wanted you to do things right. So he was tolerant but perseverant and open-minded. So he wanted the society registered in Mumbai, Bombay. And since Mukunda and I did a little work on it in London, he said, please register the society. So we took Aryabhinda basics, nothing spiritual, but you can disseminate films, more than disseminate, you can spread films, videos, you can purchase land, all the things, all the aims and objects you needed for the society. Then there was a thing, the founder of Acharyas, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The next line I put in, the founder of Acharyas shall have full veto power. So Prabhupada's looking it over, and he didn't miss things. He always looked it over, and he, with his golden fingers, would see something. He says, the founder Acharya shall have full veto power. There is no name. But the above it was the founder Acharya's A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada. I thought that would do. It was tantamount to impersonalism by not saying it again. And he was teaching me personalism. And he said, who is founder Acharya? You? Brahmananda? Brahmananda got the source from afar again. And so I said, no. He said, you must rectify this. So I went and did a board meeting, and we made the amendment, and I took it to the official who thought he was God, and he wanted a Bakshi's bribe. And he says, no, I can't change this. I said, well, the board changed it. Here it is. He wondered. So I said, I'm having a meeting, a press conference tonight. So what do you want me to say, that you were wanting a bribe, you didn't know the law, even though you're in that position, or you're just ignorant? Which one? And then I pounded on the desk, and he said, I will sign. And I brought it to Prabhupada. But for 3 days, Prabhupada was giving me the transcendental silent treatment. He wouldn't look at me. He wouldn't talk to me until I did this. And I even hid behind a doorway in the hall, and he was coming. And I went like this so he could see me. Somehow or other, he's still chanting. He didn't see me. So then I presented it to him. And that's when he said, I did not think, I said, I didn't want to be founder of Acharya. I really don't. And he said, I did not think that, but I could think that. That's the lesson. And so we're glorifying Prabhupada, and this was years ago, but that was then, and this is now. And what we want to do is with the same ambition, magic, imagination and perseverance, tell people about Krishna, find the common ground that they'll hear, and continue what Prabhupada wants us to do today. We can glorify him then, but he wants us to continue today. We are a wonderful family, and as I always say, it's also very important that we help each other's Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada always, when I was glorifying Samashunda, he said, then you are a wonderful devotee because you are seeing the good in others. So we are this family, so let's glorify Prabhupada by continuing what he wants today.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we done? How are we doing? I really didn't have that kind of problem. Prabhupada was always there as far as...
Some... Were you asking me too?
Yeah, okay, you answer.
So, the question was that sometimes was it hard when you were so intimate with Prabhupada? I mean, that was the same. And how did you change it?
No, later, when the movement grew so big and so many devotees, how did you adapt?
Well, sometimes it's really like being in the fire, near the fire, the purification blaze. It really depended on Prabhupada's mood and what was going on and what he was telling us to do. But he always treated me like a special pet. So even if it was hard, I felt like Prabhupada's dog by the door, because he would not chastise me more than I needed it. And he wouldn't do it at all if I couldn't take it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't chastise people who would be too devastated. Yeah. The spiritual master said this. So it's because of this wonderful individual rasa I had with him that I was able to change with it. I simply said, what mood is Prabhupada in, and I'm going to go with it. Does he want to write Indira Gandhi? Does he want to chastise me? Does he want to feed people on Ekadashi? They're not following Ekadashi. Feed the quarter. You know, things like that he would come up with.
But I think she was asking you, after the movement became very big and you didn't have personal time for Prabhupada.
No, I still pushed my way in when it got big.
There's the answer. You still push your way in.
very wonderful 6 o'clock exchanges. Then later on it became, oh, it's vulgar, we got everything from regimented, almost military academies that he's got. And when people tried, they joined the structure in a similar profile. Then actually those are fruits all over it, all the Cantonese. So like, was that your question?
No.
But that was but that is a phenomenon that it seemed to be like that. But when the movement got really big, at least for me personal, it still didn't change. It was a little bit of a different flavor, but I still had this relationship. And one time on the train, he was saying that any devotee that steps towards Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate. So that was part of the equation. It wasn't just will Prabhupada bless me, but you wanted to please him. So I always said, how can I please him?
Yeah, they should still carry on that.
You know, they say to him, how did you do it? How did you do it? I just wanted to see Prabhupada smile that night.
That's the whole purpose of life.
Want to see him smile at night when we give the report.
That shouldn't change through your whole lifetime, whether Prabhupada's here or not. You want to please Prabhupada every day, and every moment, doing the most attention-getting thing. You know that he'll pay attention if you do this.
He goes first. Sorry.
Can you give us a personal pastime with Shiva and George Harrison, with Shiva Prabhupada? Can you give
Well, he always considered George Harrison to be more like a son than a disciple. He said that on several occasions. He is more like my son than my disciple, because George asked him, should I, you know, shave my head and you know, wear a dhoti and when I do things? And George said, no. He says, you carry on your normal life and just think of Krishna and everything you do. And George pretty much did that his whole life.
He said that your music will influence people. And then he came out with Material World and My Sweet Lord and all these great, wonderful songs, The Far East Man, that was translating Krishna philosophy into words that people could understand. This was a great service that he did. And Prabhupada knew that if George was washing dishes in the kitchen, sincerely, it wouldn't have the same influence in the world. So that's why.
I don't know if you've seen it, but Patty Boyd, who was his wife at the time, wrote an autobiography. I read it last year. She came out with it. And she says right out in there, she said, the reason I left George is because he made it an ultimatum, whether it was his wife or Krishna. And he chose Krishna. So, I mean, the world doesn't really realize that, how much influence Prabhupada really had on George. He kept his spiritual life quite private in order not to become considered an extremist or a cultist. But he practiced Krishna consciousness every day of his life since Prabhupada's time. He chanted every day. He spent... His wife told me, his current wife told me that she never expected to see him before about 11 in the morning, because he spent 2 hours every morning in his temple chanting. And his whole life, right up to the end, he was Krishna conscious. In fact, more than I'll ever aspire to be. Yes, he left his body with Prabhupada's chanting going on in the background. And the deities that Svabhas kindly supplied, deities brought in Krishna at his feet, at the end of his bed. And the last thing he said to me was, thank you, thank you. Yeah, he was so Krishna conscious. So, I mean, and a year even before he passed away, he said that he didn't really want us to hang around here anymore in this material world. He, you know, what more could you have? He's already had every material fantasy known to humans. He'd already fulfilled in full. And he said, I just want to be with Krishna. I just want to leave here and go to Krishna. You don't meet many self-realized souls.
So, is it short?
Very short.
Okay.
You were talking about the magic. I saw the contact sheet of those 12 pictures you took in Russia.
Yeah.
Beautifully composed.
Each one was perfect, wasn't it?
For those who don't know, Gurdas was one of the first photographers and really documented Prabhupada a lot in Europe. And when you look on a Back to Godhead and you look on the masthead and you see this picture of Prabhupada with his finger up like that, was taken from Gurdas' picture.
Almost every famous picture.
And then you carried it on.
Well, a bunch of us.
By the way, I didn't mean to demean people working in the Krishna, in the kitchen. Our hierarchy is like this. The administrator and the cooker is as important. If an administrator has some expertise in that, that's nice, but it doesn't mean they're better devotees. So when I said that, I didn't mean to imply that working in the kitchen was low.
Everything you do for Krishna is perfect. If the intent is there, just to do your very best.
Be sincere.
To please Srila Prabhupada. Everything comes out perfect.
Be sincere.
You can't plan it to come out any better than it does.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.